Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read.
Welcome to Literary Quest. This episode, we are discussing For the Throne by Hannah Witton. It is the second book in the duology. The first one was For the Wolf. So, for characters, we have Nevara, or Neve. She is the main female lead. She is Red's older sister, the first daughter, and queen of Vlita. At the end of the last book, she was dragged into the Shadowlands, and in this book, she's tasked with killing old gods to help get their power in order to be able to kill the kings of the Shadowlands. She is intelligent, resourceful, and a dedicated sister. She's also a bit morally gray herself, especially in the first book. Solmir, he is the main male lead. He was once a king slash god in the Shadowlands, and he's now focusing on destroying the current kings as they're trying to access the normal world. And if this were to happen, the kings would cause havoc above. He and Neve do not get along well because she's unsure if she can trust him, as he spent a good portion of time imitating her fiance and tricking her. He is also responsible for her being in the Shadowlands. We have Red, Neve's younger sister, who's trying to get her out of the Shadowlands. She is married to Aemon, or the Wolf, and they're connected to the Wilderwood. Literally, like, they are the Wilderwood. They have two friends, Lyra and Fife, who help them out. Red and the Wolf were the focus of the previous book. Next, we have Rafe, Neve's previous love interest. He's determined to help get her back and is kind of taking care of some of the queenly duties while she's away. He's also responsible for sending Kiri, the evil priestess, west and convincing the rest of the order to follow her. Along the way, he meets Caillou, who figures out something is going on with the queen and demands to join him to avoid marriage. Then we have, in terms of locations, we have the Shadowlands. It's the land of monsters and gods. The kings are trying to get free, and the result is the destabilization of both the Shadowlands and the Wilderwood. It is also the direct opposite of the Wilderwood. Even the trees are upside down, and colors are severely muted. It's almost black and white. And then we have the Wilderwood, which is a magical forest and was the focus of the previous book.
All right. So this book, For the Throne, picks up right where For the Wolf left off. So that is with Neve emerging from a glass coffin in the Shadowlands, where the five old kings were banished with the old gods to contain magic in this world. She runs immediately into Solmir, one of the old kings, the youngest of the old kings, who had inhabited Neve and Red's friend Eric, his body, and colluded with the high priestess Kiri to bring the old kings back into the world, allegedly to kill them. So Solmir is still trying to figure out how to bring the other old kings down while keeping his soul intact. And Neve feels like it's her responsibility to finish the business with the Shadowlands and the kings, as she was unable to let Red go to the Wolf in the last book and started the chain of events leading up to where she is now. So Neve and Solmir grow closer as they work together to destroy the old gods, harvest their magic, and come up with a plan to kill the four other kings without getting themselves killed in turn. Meanwhile, in Valeda, Red and Aemon, who absorbed the Wilderwood at the end of the last book, search for answers on how to get Neve back to their world, and unfortunately are coming up mostly empty-handed. Red has a series of dreams where a voice tells her that Neve must become her match in the Shadowlands for her to return, where Red absorbed the power of the Wilderwood, so Neve must absorb the Shadowlands power. And so Rafe, who is Neve and Red's friend, is running interference in Valeda, trying to make everyone think everything is fine and normal. So he told everyone that Neve is just sick and she's recovering in Florian, and Rafe is mostly keeping things together. However, Okada Kaiu, who is the third daughter of the king of Neo, which is a distant country, arrives. And Kaiu is the third in line for the throne in Valeda, actually, after Neve and after Red, she would be the third in line to inherit. And so Kaiu arrives allegedly to study and quickly ferrets out that Rafe is lying about the circumstances regarding Neve. So she offers to fund a trip with Rafe, Red, and company to Rilt to see if Kiri, the high priestess who is recovering in Rilt, may offer them some advice for returning Neve to their world. However, Kaiu is far more than she seems, and while they search for answers on the surface, the Shadowlands begin to deteriorate, and the effects are felt even in their world. So will Neve be able to save herself? And what will happen to the old kings? Spoilers abound.
So I loved this book.
I did too, like more than the first book even.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't decide. I really liked both. Okay, I was really excited for this one because of her character arc in the last book.
Yes.
It was just all over the place and I was like, this is gonna be great. I love her. Like, this is like chaotic and amazing, so I'm excited for this. Yeah, I don't know which one's my favorite. Like, I felt like For the Wolf was a pretty, I guess, more of a traditional, like, kind of retelling, kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a little bit more, I don't know. And then this one I felt like was so unique. I don't know. I love them both.
Yeah.
Both.
I felt like, in the first book, we talked about this when we read it, I was expecting it to be a more typical retelling of Little Red Riding Hood, and it starts out with some of the imagery of that story and then pretty quickly derails into like its own different story.
Yeah.
And I felt like this story didn't look like any other
retelling.
Story, like, yeah, any other yeah. retelling.
Yeah.
It was super unique. And so I knew that you were going to appreciate Neve's chaotic spiral. Her path in the first book was pretty unexpected, and I knew you were going to appreciate that in this book. But I feel like sometimes when you have a duology, first book starts out strong, second book gets weird. And I didn't get that at all with this book. First book, I feel like was real strong. Second book was spectacular. There were parts of it that moved a little slow, and I'm sure that we'll delve into that. But for the most part, I feel like the pacing was great. The story was, I felt, original. I love that, like, it's a love story kind of, but not like, we also have the love story. So we have like filial love, family love, which I feel like has just as strong of a presence in this book as the romantic love stories.
I agree. And you mentioned how it's a duology, and I think the author did such a good job of keeping it separate, like the characters separate, but also still being able to intertwine it with the first book, you know, because it was such a separate story, you know, like she's in a totally different land, basically the complete opposite of the last book, you know, but she still managed to like weave it all together so well. I really appreciated this book. And how that was all done.
Yeah, I thought it was spectacular. I loved the ending too. And again, we'll talk about that more when we get through some of this. But I just felt like she wrote a really good original story. Things happened that I didn't expect. I feel like rare to be surprised in a book these days. I don't know. I don't know if you feel that way, but I feel like when something happens that's truly surprising in a story, it's just so nice and unexpected. And I felt that way with parts of the story.
Yeah, I agree. And I know in the first one, it seems like it's going to be a little Red Riding Hood, but then I thought it morphed more into like a Beauty and the Beast
Yeah.
one.
I were they both turned into the beast at the end?
They're not beasts. I mean, like, in terms of
They're
the
forest
romance,
gods.
I love that so much. Okay, but it was also really kind of confusing to describe, to be like, oh, like, yeah, they're forest gods. Anyway, yes, okay. But the romance in that one I felt was very, because like, he's like all scarred and he's like, nobody likes me, and blah, blah, blah. But whatever.
He's still kind of that way.
Well,
He's still scarred and he feels like
I
nobody likes him but Red
know.
and Lyra and Fife.
Oh.
Yeah. I love the way this author writes. It does wonderful things for my brain. I know we, so in the first book, I know that we talked about this because the way that she describes the trees is gorgeous. The magic that they have, the like scariness of them. They're scary trees. Like the way that she wrote them in that first book was spectacular. And then just as beautiful in this book, all of her descriptions of Aemon and Red were outstanding. She talks about the way when Aemon speaks, his voice has like the susurrations of leaves and it sounds foresty when he is usually angry. But the way that he moves and the sounds that are associated with him are like forest sounds. She talks about how it sounds like leaves rustling as he moves. Their physical descriptions with like the green veins, and then as Red becomes more magical, the gold veins, but also the ivy in Red's hair that kind of has a lot like a mind of its own, and Aemon's antlers and the bark that grows on their arms when they're embracing the wildwood power and like their green eyes. It was beautiful. If I were a forest god, I would want to look like this.
Yes, I also love those descriptions. And what I liked about it too, well, there was one part where so she describes what Red looks like. And Neve mentions like how she's gorgeous, like she's still gorgeous and she became what she was meant to be, right? And so I feel like a lot of times we'll see them be like, oh, you look different now, you know? And she didn't have that sort of negative reaction to it, which I liked.
Yes. And Neve's description is also, I mean, it's like terrifying. She sounds
Yes.
frightening. She's got her pale skin and black veins and black taking up all of her eyes, but her iris and the contrast is so sharp, I feel like, in comparison to Red. They're crafted to be opposites.
Yeah, the descriptions were great. Yeah, which is great. And yeah, like the descriptions of the Shadowlands too, how it's all like black and white almost. Everything's inverted and the opposite of the Wilderwood, you know, everything's bones.
Yeah.
I did have a note in there and I was like, why so many bones?
Where, yes. Where? From where did all of the bones come? Like mountains are made of them.
And not just like one mountain either. You're like, okay, you'll have one, like so much of this is just bones.
Yes. Which makes you wonder, like, what was it like here bef when everything was still alive? Was
Yeah.
there any landscape?
Bones.
And no, if they were still alive, they weren't bones yet. So the mountain of bones didn't exist. Like, how did y'all get into this mountain form? How did this happen?
That's true. Somebody had to stack them.
Yes, somebody put those bones into mountain form. Who is the architect of the Bone Mountain? And why did you do it that way?
Why wouldn't you hide them behind bushes? You made them into a gigantic mountain.
I thought the descriptions of that were really interesting too. They run across one Like it's a femur, I think, that's so long that they can't, like, they can't climb, or so big they can't climb over it. They have to go around it. Like, I would not want to be there whenever whatever belonged to that femur was alive.
Yeah. Sounds like it was a very dangerous place.
Yes. Yeah.
It in my head, I just started picturing it as being like gigantic dinosaurs and stuff.
Yes. But yeah, there was like a dragon, there was a serpent. Well, the serpent died in the book. Whatever the weaver was. I don't
Yeah.
know. I don't know what that was. But whatever it was, the weaver, the rat, the roach, like, this is not a fun place to exist. Who's worshiping the rat, by the way? It was one of the old gods. Like, who's paying homage to this creature?
That's a good question.
And the roach, like, who,
Oh.
what's your goal in worshiping that one?
I mean, roaches, I hate them so much. They're very resilient.
Okay.
So maybe
So we
people
pray to the roach for strength.
to be able to survive nuclear war.
Maybe so. Do we pray to the rat for fertility because they reproduce in
That's there you
mass?
go. There you go.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It doesn't sound like the funnest place to live. What was that movie where it had Tobey Maguire in it and Reese Witherspoon, and it was like set in the 50s and everything was in black and white?
Oh, Pleasantville.
Yeah. That's the vibe. That's kind of what I imagine with everything
Yeah.
being in black and white. All right, so Neve,
Yes.
she's pretty great in this book, right?
She is. I she's smart. That's what I like about her a lot, is that she's smart and rational through a lot of this. So she's wary of Solmir, like, even though he's being nice to her and stuff. They've got this, like, this flirtatious stuff kind of going on. She's still really wary of him for the majority of the book, almost. I think even after they get together, she's still, yeah,
Yeah.
she's still, because they say something to her afterwards and they're like, oh, you had sex with him and you shouldn't trust him, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she's still, I just appreciated that for her
Yes.
character a lot. And she kind of, so I said she's smart, right? So I feel like she knows when to run too, as well, instead of just being like, I'm gonna fight, and then gets injured. So there's that one scene where Solmir is like just getting beaten up, right? Like, it's not going well for him. And she's like, toodaloo, and runs away, which I like. She's
Yeah.
just like, okay, bye. Not gonna hesitate here.
Yeah. I feel like that's a pretty good contrast to how Red was in the last book too, because there was I feel like I can't totally remember everything, but it seems like there were a few things that Red did, and I was like, "You stupid girl,
Yeah, I think,
why did you do this with the
didn't she?
trees?"
Yeah, didn't she try to escape at one point?
She
I feel
tried to escape.
yeah.
She I don't almost got herself killed a few times. Someone was pretending to be Eric at the gate at one point, and she was like going to open it, and it was a monster tree. I feel like, yes, I feel like Neve is a little bit more maybe rational.
Yeah, which I appreciated. That one king was right. I don't remember which one. I think it started with a V.
Oh, Valkyr.
Valkyr, right? And he gives her this like speech about not taking responsibility for things. And he's not wrong, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, especially when it came to, I know in the last book, she was very much wanted Red to stay, and Red was just, no, thank you. I would like to
You got
return to the
married. Yeah.
woods, please. And she's just like, no, I don't
And she
want you
puts
to.
her in prison, right?
Yeah. That's what her character arc was, just wild. But yeah, and so she does have a little bit of problem taking responsibility for some stuff and some of her actions, you know. But I think it also made her smarter as well. She'd learned from it, which I appreciated as well. It wasn't like she went right back to, and she was willing to, even though this god was evil, right? She still kind of took the criticism and you know, worked on it, I guess, at that point.
I mean, just because he's bad doesn't mean he's wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So she has some personal growth as
Yes.
well.
And I think because she was kind of morally gray as well, especially in the last book, this made her really well suited for the tasks here and for being able to survive in the Shadowlands. Yeah.
I really enjoyed Neve and Solmir's, like, their adventure through the Shadowlands, but also their, like, chemistry. Their interactions were, I don't know, it felt like teasing almost.
Yeah.
So they, like, there's chemistry there, but they're both fighting it for a lot of the book. At the same time, Solmir does these things that are really, like, he hums like a lullaby while she's sleeping, and he encourages her to rest, and he gives her his jacket, and he carves that thing for her, and he tells her that she's good, and he doesn't think he's good. And at one point, he tells her that she's worth reaching into the darkness for, like, ugh.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's, like, this hate vibe between them. Like, two characters with flaws. Yep. Rubbing against each other. Like, the seeing Solmir struggle with his feelings for her is interesting. And so, for probably a good part of this, we see him struggling to put distance between them so that he can sacrifice her because he's planning to. And kind of gives up on that at one point. They have this one, like, love hate vibe. Or moment where it's like, oh, it's so good. And so they're sniping at each other, and she says to him, I can't be your conscience. And a spark in his eye, a snarl to match hers, I can't be your spine. Like,
I love that. I highlighted that too.
that was so
That
good.
was really good. That was. Yep. Definitely. I loved their interactions as well. I loved just their whole journey in particular too, and them getting to know each other, and yeah.
Also, the killing of the gods.
Was so I thought that was going to be harder at
Same.
first.
Two of them were just like, Matt, do it. Oh, no, I
Yeah.
guess they were all, yeah, no, two of them were like, Meh,
Well, they only needed
just stab
two.
me. Well, yeah, but the oracle, so the snake was like, it needs to be you, Neve. Go ahead and just be quick about it, you know, just a little stab. And that's it. And the Leviathan, even, he was the one that was like, the king's told me all this stuff, but it's got to be you. So if you'll just, like, cut my throat, we're good. It was the Oracle that struggled. And that one was super creepy.
Yeah. That was the one where they go and the Oracle assumes that, oh no, wait, do I have this back? Assumes that they're letting her free.
Yeah,
Then they came
like
to
they're
kill
gonna
her,
take
right?
it with, yeah.
Yeah. And then like she's like, oh, you're gonna kill me. Cool. That works too.
Rude of you, but okay.
Yeah, basically. Rude. But okay. Yeah, and
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting because I think it was the snake who said, or serpent, I guess, who said that he was just tired of living, basically, at this point. And we've seen that come up decent amount of times in the books that we've read when it comes to immortality, about how you get to a certain point and it's just you're tired. And I couldn't imagine how long that they've been in the Shadowlands with it being so depressing, right? Because it's gotta like
it's not fun here anymore. Everybody's dead. It's just bones.
There are too many bones here. Please kill me. Like, tired of all these bones. But yeah, I mean, you know, if it was alive still and there was stuff, you know, there's more entertainment. But with they're just hanging out in the bones, like bone caves. I don't know, like, you know.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like a shit time.
Yeah. So I get it.
Yeah. The Oracle tripped me out. That one was pretty brutal. Because Solmir is the one that kills them. And he's not, and it's they're not expecting it, and like slits his throat, and it, I think, unleashes this violent scream, and the mountain starts to collapse. And leading up to that, Neve, it hurts her. So they ask it for information, and it like gives it, but it hurts Neve. She talks about the knot of feelings that she's been suppressing about like her own shortcomings and failings and things like that, and they wouldn't be in this situation if she had just let Red go, and her desperate need to control some part of the situation is what got them there in the first place. And
I think, and I mean, we learned it was inevitable though, right? This was what had to happen no matter what. But yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. The Leviathan, that one was pretty weird.
Yeah.
I don't, was it supposed to be like an octopus monster?
I guess.
I feel like there was mention of tentacles, but it was also, and this is a, I don't, I feel like this is a hard concept for me in my brain to, like, something being so, like, massive or powerful that, like, your brain can't comprehend it. That's the Leviathan. And so he's got like a corpse puppet that he communicates through, which is weird, man.
Effective.
I guess.
No, it was weird.
It's weird. That's weird. But he, the Leviathan is also like, yeah, it's gotta be Neve. Go ahead and cut my throat.
Make it quick.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, definitely thought that that was gonna be harder
for sure.
Yeah.
Didn't expect everyone to be down for this.
I know, right.
It's just the kings that are not up for it. Solmir is so angsty sometimes. He talks about it, like his shriveled little soul that he's just trying to, I was like, okay, man. But then he has this tattoo on his arm. It's like three bands or something. And so Neve asks about it, and he's explaining how like part of it's for his kingdom, part of it's for something else. And then the little line at the bottom, the thin one is for me, the least important part of the whole equation.
Oh, Solmir.
Bless your heart.
I mean, I have to say, I think he's probably less, he's not as angsty as the wolf.
I guess. I mean, I like Aemon better, so I'm probably gonna feel more supportive of him and his angst. Aemon's pretty angsty too though.
Yeah, he definitely is.
Oh, but even like when he confesses his love to Neve, he says like, I love you, don't say it back. Okay.
And she's just, sure, great, I didn't say it back to the last guy either.
They run into a character, her name is the Seamstress. She was the lover of the Weaver, one of the gods that died. And that whole interaction was pretty trippy. There's a goat outside that screams, has three eyes, and it sounds like breaking glass or something like that, right? So not your regular screaming goat. Her description is like human on top, spider on bottom. I'm not
that
down
was
for that.
Disturbing. did not like.
Do not appreciate that at all.
Nope, that was a that was no. terrible.
Yup. It reminded me of the mom on Coraline, the movie. She changes into a spider. Nope.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. And but... I just, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I had just been thinking recently, there's that one book where it's like a spider romance, sort of, right? It kept coming up in my like recommended. It kept coming up in all of these books. And I was like, maybe I'll read it. So I'm like, I really don't know. And then this happened. And I was like, I'm not reading that book.
No.
I
It's
can't handle
always
this.
Spiders. They always put in spiders. Why? Ugh. They talk about the dead bug that Solmir brings her as like a sacrifice. She's got them all like twisted up and hanging from her ceiling. Like, this is gross.
Yeah. Not.
Blah. I don't like it. I don't want it.
I feel like disliking spiders is such a common thing that that's probably like always good to
An
like put
easy
in.
target.
Yeah.
Oh, we need a villain. Make it a spider.
Give it eight legs.
Give it eight legs and a human body on top.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh. No. But she does say this one thing that I really like too. Neve and Solmir, she says, "You think love is so difficult, such a fraught thing, but sometimes it can be simple, even when everything around it is not." I liked that quote. There were a lot of good quotes in this book.
There were. I highlighted a lot of this book.
Yeah, same. Right. So things are chaotic in the Shadowlands, and also a little bit in the Wilderwood and Valeda, right? So we have a new character. Her name is Okata Kaiyu. She is the third daughter from the kingdom of Neoni. I'm not sure. One of those. And she just happens to show up in Valeda and just happens to intercept a letter from Kiri and just happens to be available to provide it to Rafe at night. Who gets mail at night? Whatever. And just asks all these weird and suspicious questions. And everyone's like, okay, I guess we'll just go along with it. No one is suspicious enough.
I know. Red was the only one who was like, this seems not right.
And Aemon was like, I don't trust her. We should be careful. And that's Aemon with everything, though. He's like, yeah, we should be careful.
Yeah. And she ended up, I mean, she wasn't bad, but she had the, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, it's, I've just got so frustrated with how suspicious she was the whole time. And everyone was like, well, she's paying for this trip to Rilt, so. And she knows what's going on with Neve. We can't just like, nah, like you could kill her. Okay, whatever. They get to Rilt and she immediately knows where Kiri is. And still no one is like, ah, how do you know where in this like church thing? What is it? It's not a church, sanctuary, wherever they're at. Priestess's home. How do you know where Kiri is? Y'all, ask the questions.
Yeah. I guess if we're talking a little bit about Kiri and all of that, that I have to say was the part of the book where I don't know if it dragged or if I just kind of got overwhelmed because there was so much going on all at once. But I have to say, I think that was the part of the book that was, that dragged for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just felt almost like an unnecessary side quest to me. Like, does Kiri... First of all, I forgot that Kiri was even alive still. Rafe at the beginning of the book is talking about how he sent her to Rilt to heal. And I was thinking, like, why did nobody kill her?
Yeah.
Why didn't she just get murdered in the last book? Did we really feel like she was the one that needed to be left alive?
Okay. You know what's really bad? So you know how he has her like slung over her shoulder at some point and is just like carrying her around and nobody's really saying anything when he first like dumps her?
Yeah.
Right? I couldn't help but picture Emperor's New Groove right? Where he's got him in
Oh,
the bag.
Gronk.
Yes.
And he's doing his own theme music.
That's what I pictured. Oh, sorry.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, like, I just didn't, I forgot Carrie was alive, and then when I found out she was alive, I was thinking, why?
Yeah.
Somebody, like, she sucked. Somebody should have killed her. But no, Carrie's still alive, and I agree. I didn't feel like they had to be doing something in this part
Yeah.
of their story, so it makes sense that this is it. But it didn't. It felt just kind of not like a really productive side quest, because they get to Rilt, they question Kiri, she has nothing helpful to give them, and then they can't leave.
And then
And then they try to kill Red.
right, and then Caillou kills Kiri.
Well,
Right?
Caillou, no, Aemon kills Kiri. It's really like super satisfying. Probably the most satisfying part of
I
this
thought she was
storyline.
strangling her, like she came up behind her.
She did. She looped a belt around her neck, and she looped a belt around her neck, and she was restraining her because Kiri was trying to kill Red, and Red was. This reminded me of, I cannot remember what story it is. It's one that we've read where they talk about how you need to train your physical body and not just rely on your magic, right? So Red is being attacked by Kiri, and she's trying to use her like Wilderwood magic to protect herself. Well, they're in a stone building. There's like not trees, right? And she's calling on plants. Well, they've got to come up through the ground, through the stone or whatever. And Kiri's coming for her neck with a knife. And I'm like, use your arms, defend yourself, do something. And Caillou intervenes, and she loops a band like a belt around her neck. And then Aemon busts into the room at that point, and he picks Kiri up and breaks her neck. It's very
Oh,
satisfying.
that's right. See, this part of the book, I feel like I zoned out a little bit reading it just because it was like, I don't know, just because I wasn't interested in it
Yeah.
at all. And so yeah. But that's right. Now that you say that, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, no. At
Yeah.
Kiri's death, Aemon taking care of Kiri was very satisfying. And then they all
Imagine
just like
dead.
bail out. Yeah. Oh
Right.
my
Like,
God,
so, like,
she
what was the
sucked.
point of killing her? Was she even a threat?
Yeah. So she was the threat because she was trying to kill Red. Like
No,
she
no,
was.
no. But I mean, like, if they hadn't gone there,
I don't know.
like, they just let her, like,
Exist, but they had to go there because Caillou, that was part of her deal with them, right? She was trying to get them there so that they could kill Red, because they thought that killing Red would force Neve to open a portal, like she would just give up, open the portal, sacrifice everything, let the world burn.
Yeah.
So that was the ultimate goal. Caillou was trying to get them there so that that could happen, because she to protect herself as the third daughter from being married off to this terrible guy, which is what we find out and why we know that everything that she did was suspicious. It's because it was. So Caillou went to Rilt to keep herself from having to be married off to this guy who has a history of killing his wives. And she joined this order. Well, they realized or discovered that she was third in line for the throne in Valeda, and we're like, look, if you want to stay here and us not turn you back over to your dad, then you got to bring us Red. So she's doing it to protect herself, and she explains all that. Kai's like, look, I was just doing what I had to do to keep myself safe. And Red is far more understanding than I would be, probably, if someone was trying to kill me, but whatever. Caillou's character could have used a little more development.
I agree, because even at like the end, I feel like I didn't get a good sense of who she was,
Yeah.
you know? Like, okay, we know what she did, why she did, but like we don't know much about her. Did we
Yeah.
didn't have any, maybe because we didn't have any chapters from her
Nothing from
point of
her
view.
perspective.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that would have been helpful
Yeah.
in better understanding her motivations. Like, not wanting to be murdered is a good motivation, but I think in terms of relating to the character, having something from her perspective or understanding her history better would have been helpful. Because, for example, she is pretty mysterious. She can drive a carriage. She drinks like a fish. She threatens sailors. Like, she has all these mysterious things. Like, you know that she's going to have to be incorporated in some way because of the prophecy that talks about the golden veined queen and the shadow queen, and then the third daughter, the far flung daughter, whatever. Like, you know, or that was my assumption as I was reading, that she was going to have to get involved at in some way. But I feel like all of the other characters' experience, like, were pretty well developed, and she was still pretty mysterious.
I agree.
So all that happens, they sail back, and everything falls apart. They get back to Valeda, and that's around the time that Neve kills the Leviathan, and everything falls apart, and they get, like, time warped or teleported to the Sanctum, which is where the old kings are.
Yeah, and, like, immediately captured.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, boop, immediately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was nothing to do, like, at that point. Like, that's where they have to go. Oh, I did want to talk about, I'm not done talking in trash about the things that are happening in the Wilderwood. Let's go back. Red doing stupid things again. Ah!
Yeah. I know. She, like, so this is the way I pictured it, where I think this is probably the scene that you're referencing. The way I actually was, she, like, shoved her hands into the earth to try to reach through to the Shadowlands.
Yeah.
Which gave her valuable information.
She got her key.
Yep, but also, like, was stupid. She didn't know
and
what
she
would happen.
Almost died.
Yeah. She was just like, let me just do this. It's fine. Like, why? I mean, she clearly, you know, she got the information and everything, but
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there could have been some more. She could have taken more of her time thinking about it.
We could have done this better. Yeah.
Yeah.
She, and maybe this is the difference in their roles, right? So Neve has been trained to be the queen for her entire life. And so her perspective on considering situations and really thinking things through, we see a lot in how she handles Solmir, the gods, the other kings. Red, her entire life, I mean, she was just raised to be sacrificed, right?
Right.
So she probably didn't have to put as much thought into the consequences of her actions like Neve would. Because for Neve, if she's going to be queen, then all of her interactions are going to have an impact on her entire kingdom. With Red, it's like, Mah, you're going to turn 20. We're going to send you to the forest, where presumably you will die. And so maybe because of that, she doesn't have the same experience in thinking through her actions that Neve does. And so she does dumb stuff like this, where she tells Aemon, like, I want to bring Neve back. And he's like, okay, me too, but I love you. We just kind of got to the point where maybe we're at a little bit of peace. We need to be smart about this. And Red's like, I don't care about being cautious. And then almost gets herself killed.
Yeah. She's very
I want my sister back. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like she's very impatient and kind of wants, like, I want it now, you know, sort of vibe from her. And Neve is much more willing to put it, like, take her time with it. She's patient. And
yeah.
She can. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have Fife and Lyra. And, like, okay, they've gotten to, I don't under, like, they've got sort of this, like, I don't know if we would call it, like, platonic romance, or Lyra almost sounds a little bit asexual. Like, they love each other. She's not really interested in sex. Fife is very supportive of and loving of her. So whatever their relationship is. I struggled with their characters in this book, though, because between them and Aemon and Red, we have just a group of people who don't know how to communicate.
Yeah.
Red talks a few times about how there's a fight bubbling just, like, right under the surface, but we keep, like, stepping past it. Like, have a fight. Say what you need to say and move on. I just got so frustrated. Fife isn't going to tell, like, Fife made a deal at the end of the last book so that Lyra wouldn't be killed. Nobody knows what the deal is. But when Red almost gets herself killed, Aemon is very upset. He saves her, and Fife gets really pissed off because when Aemon saves her, he summons Fife. Lyra doesn't know that he made a deal on her behalf so that she would live. So he's been outed. Like, maybe you should have told her. Maybe if y'all would just talk with each other, we wouldn't have any of these problems. But it's a plot device, and this is the stuff that's going to happen, I guess. So I don't know.
She put something in here that I had also highlighted. So there's this quote, Red, when Red tries to get Aemon to talk to Fife. And when he says, like, he says, I told him I was sorry, and trying to make him forgive me about is about my feelings, not his. Which I liked, because it's true. You know, like, sometimes you apologize because you, like, to make yourself feel better, right? To try to absolve yourself. And I just, I love that he recognized that he can't push him to accept his apology.
Yeah, I love that too. He's taking responsibility for his feelings. And that I feel like that's such a great point to make, because a lot of times I feel like we do things with the intention of making ourselves feel less bad, right? And so him trying to get Fife to forgive him isn't about Fife's forgiveness. It's about him feeling less bad. And sometimes you just have to sit with discomfort, right? Sometimes you just have to allow those uncomfortable feelings to settle in, and they will pass. But that's part of being human. Sometimes we experience things that don't feel good. So it's acknowledging that and then trying to do better next time. I love Aemon. I just want, like, a big, beautiful tree man in my life. He's just, like, so sweet. He cares about Fife and Lyra and Red so much. He just wants to, his life has been so painful. He just wants to be happy and in love. Ah!
I know. I just want him to be happy.
I enjoyed the mythology with the prophecy of the Golden Veined Queen and the Shadow Queen and the Fireflung Daughter. I liked how the author kept bringing us back to that with the reference to, I mean, like, everyone calls Neve the Shadow Queen. And Red eventually has, like, literally golden veins at some point. And they talk about the stars, so the constellations, when they're speaking with one of the other characters, Valdric and Bormaine, about the key symbols that they've run into. I like how she kept weaving that kind of in.
Yeah.
If you're going to introduce a prophecy,
keep it going.
Yes. And I think she did great with that.
Yeah, I agree. Although in the beginning, when the prophecy is read off and Neve's just like, forget it, and chucks it in the fire.
Oh my gosh, she burns the book.
I was like, what?
I was so bothered. Like, no, you don't do that. Who burns a book just because they get mad at it?
I know.
It's historical.
I mean, somebody else might want to read it. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Rude.
That was very, like, I guess, queen thing to do. Like, ugh, I don't need this book. Nobody else will, so I'll just chuck it in the fire. It's fine.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. We don't treat books that way. In the Shadow World, Neve has amassed all of this power. They get to the sanctum, I think, which is where the old kings are. They're like statues. Right? Yeah. She asks, so they're super hateful and disgusting and gross, like creepy old men. And
they truly are, yeah.
She asks to see Solmir, who they have in, like, a dungeon. And she goes to him. And that's when he says, I love you, don't say it back. And then they have sex in a dungeon in a giant rib cage. And like, good for them, I guess. But I was just thinking about how dirty they must both be.
There was only one scene here in this story where they addressed like basically showering. I mean, they found water and bathed. And I had that same thought. I'm like, oh, like not only is it probably dirty on the ground, they themselves are dirty.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they have a difficult situation that they're in, right? Neve is the one that they had planned on using as the vessel for the gods, but or the kings, but it would probably kill her. And so Solmir decides to be the vessel. Well, that doesn't work out because he's just got his tiny little shriveled up soul. Because he used to be bad and now he's trying to be good. And Neve is trying to figure out what to do. And so she turns herself into a god.
Positive thinking.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. They make the comment about how, like, you know, being a god's not that hard. Part of it's just believing that you are, and part of it's magic. Okay. I feel like there are some politicians that are doing this right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that part because it kind of seems like a little easy.
Yeah.
Almost. But at the same time, I love that she did it, especially because, right, so they said the only thing that could kill them was like a bone of another king or another god, right? Not the one that she's been carrying around. And it was great. So she's just like, I'm gonna think myself into being a god, great, and then I'm gonna cut my finger off.
That was so metal.
I
was reading that and just thinking, like, what? She cut off her pinky. I mean, we're having like a Frodo Baggins moment here, except it's Gollum that bites the finger. But like, whatever. Cuts off her pinky and stabs Valkyor, the worst of them, I guess, in the eye with her pinky, and then tosses her little pinky bone to Solmir to take care of the other ones. This is so metal, but so strange.
I mean, what else were her options, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to, like, in terms of pinky or fingers, you definitely would go with a pinky and not the thumb.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems interesting to me that a pinky is, like, powerful enough to kill these four king gods that have been frozen in time for thousands of years.
You know what? That was kind of easy, wasn't it?
A little bit. But, you know, whatever. Whatever. When you think yourself into being a god, I guess you can do whatever you want. So there you go.
And then it doesn't really come up again.
No! I thought the same thing. Like, she talks about how her little stump is bleeding at a couple of points. I'm like, no one's gonna ask her about this. They get back to, you know, the real world, and no one's going to mention that she's missing an appendage.
Yep. Maybe no. It grows back, like, after
I don't think so.
When she comes back from the dead?
No, she talks about, like, her little stump.
Oh.
I don't know. What I do know is that Neve is amazing. Yes. I love it when the female main character saves herself and everyone else. Like, that is my jam. And so she realizes that Solmir is not going to be able to house the kings. You know, women just doing all the work. So she absorbs them herself. Destroys the heart tree, which her and Red have been talking to in their dreams for like a while. And she sees Red again. And I just like love their relationship so much. Because this whole time we've had this like back and forth type of relationship with them. Where in the first book, Neve wanted Red to save herself or to save Red, even though Red was like, you know what? I'm good. I'm just going to stay here because I feel like I'm a danger to you. And then we have Neve in this moment who she, Red tries to get to her,
mm-hmm.
or she tries to go through the heart tree once and is like, you know what? I can't. I have to take care of the situation with the kings and the Shadowlands. And so Red basically, when they meet at the heart tree, which, you know, gets destroyed, she says, like, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. Even if it means sacrificing herself. Their relationship is just so good.
It really is. I love it. So the whole thing with that tree, right, was that the loves had to be equally matched, mm-hmm. right? And so I love that we've got this sisterly love, you know, being matched, and that's why they can get this whole thing to work, right? Because mm-hmm. Solmir couldn't do it.
Yeah. With
that woman.
Gaia.
Mm-hmm. Gaia, yeah. So I loved that, it being, like you said earlier, like a family love, you know?
Yeah.
So
yes. And that's,
yeah.
I just love reading that. I like romance novels. Oh, I get tired of it all being about the romance. Man, though, like the romance, because it's usually a man. Sisters doing it for themselves, and especially because I feel like in a lot of the books that we read, the sisters have a crap relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There's jealousy and competing and things like that. And we've just got two sisters who just love the hell out of each other.
Yep. And even though they're like literally direct opposites, like they were, this whole thing was so that they would be direct opposites of each other, right? Mm-hmm. They work together. They still love each other, and they know together they can solve this. And I really like that. There was no like, you're opposite and you're evil now or something. It was just, you're my sister. I love you.
I accept you.
Yep. I accept you. Let me know what I can do. What do we need to do?
Yep. Even if it means dying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I started crying.
Oh, I know.
Because, and it was not, it was like Aemon. Aemon was the one that made me cry. So Neve shows up in the shadow or in the Wilderwood, and Red is like, okay, this is it. Time to go. She starts pulling all of the magic of the Wilderwood into herself so that she can be the embodiment of the Wilderwood. And mm-hmm. so she starts taking the power from Aemon, and Aemon's like, no, I don't want you to do this. I'm afraid you're going to die. Like, please don't leave me. And Fife comes up, and Fife, who has his mark, the deal that he made, has been a mystery up until this point, is like, okay, it turns out that the bargain that I made was to pass the magic of the Wilderwood from Aemon to Red, because Aemon would literally destroy the entire world rather than do anything that would harm or kill Red.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, I know. And then when she dies, right?
Yeah.
And her body's laying there, and we get from his point of view, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just like, no, 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 no. And it's so sad.
Yeah.
And he's like, because he's human now, right? You know, he's mortal. And oh, God.
Yes. When he says, stay with me, Red, stay with me. Like, ah!
I know.
I was not expecting to cry.
Yeah. Ugh. It was intense. Then we have like this whole big thing that happens. So, okay, they both die, right?
Yeah.
And they're in some sort of middle ground. Like, it's not really afterlife. It's whatever it is, right?
Like, in between.
Yeah, like an in-between, right? So it's both of the sisters, and then we see Alaric shows up. And he's like, wait, did I say Alaric? What did I say? Oh, Alaric. I don't know why I said that. I guess Alaric. Yeah, Alaric shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I've been the voice the whole time.
I wasn't expecting that.
I was not expecting him to show up. I thought he was dead. Like, I thought he was totally wrapped up.
Same. Like,
did not think he was coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, so that was great. And then there were three apples, and they represented their souls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I thought that was interesting. And I also, that was kind of very, you know, like Adam and Eve, too, with the apples. Yeah. Kind of made, definitely kind of a throwback there. But that was just such an amazing scene, you know, and they're talking and they're like, we eat our apples, we destroyed the apples, you know, like we could probably move on from here. And obviously they pick to go back, but it means that they lose their souls.
Yes.
And it seems
And they don't just lose their souls, but that means that they'll be returning magic to the world.
Right. Yes. And yeah, and magic will return to this world. Yeah. And so they opt to lose their souls and return magic to the world so that they can come back and live again. But I like that. I like the, again, with the descriptions of the apples, even, you know, was very pretty.
Yeah. Well, and like the reunion with Eric, like it was all, I felt like it was such a great way to kind of pull this whole story together. I wasn't expecting Eric to be the voice of the tree. And I love that he was, because I felt so bad for him in the last book. He was just a guy who loved a girl and made some bad decisions for that love and then died because of it. And Neve and Red had so much guilt about his death, especially Neve. Like, they carried it through the whole book. And so I like that we have some closure on what happened with Eric, that we can say, like, okay, Neve, you don't have to feel bad anymore. But I also like that they decided to return magic to the world, too, because that's how it was before all of this with the kings and the old gods. Magic was free. When so they wake up? Not dead, just soulless, to Aemon and Solmir beating the shit out of each other.
Naturally.
Of course, as you do. And I like Red's first comment to them is like, if you're fighting about us being dead, like, you don't have to do that anymore. But if it's something else, please carry on.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Neve hasn't really said anything about Solmir, so they don't know he's not bad at this point.
Yeah. Right? Or important to her.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's at this moment where Neve, Red also punches Solmir in the face. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
But it's at this point where Neve is like, who is Caillou? Okada Caillou. And she's like, third in line. And she's like, all right, I don't want to be queen anymore. Do you want to do it? Yep. Okay. Thanks. I name you queen then. Bye. And
I loved that so much. They were like, what should we tell people? And she's like, I don't care. Tell them I died. I'm going on an adventure. Give me some adventuring clothes and I'm going to go. Like,
yes. Like, just get the backpack and leaves.
I know, right? Bye. I loved that, though. I absolutely loved that.
Yeah. I thought I loved the way that this book ended. I thought it wrapped up so well.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Okay.
Well, we have this epilogue where we kind of see like what everybody's been doing. So we have Caillou working with Rafe to run the kingdom of Valeda. She's safe from her dad. And again, I feel like we could have had just a little bit of like more build for the attraction between Rafe and Caillou, because that's something that he struggled with for the whole book, right? He and Neve kind of struggled with this back and forth of like, well, Rafe told her that he loved Neve and Neve never said it back, but she had like some romantic feelings for them, but her like priorities were always towards the queendom and things like that. And so we see how this love sort of transitions from like romantic love to friendship love, or platonic love. And so as the story progresses, we see like these little hints, these like fringes of romantic feelings between Rafe and Caillou. And they talk about how they make Rafe her consort because he basically knows how to run the kingdom. Like, he knows everybody, he grew up there. And I feel like it would have been nice maybe to see a little bit more of that sort of hint of attraction between them leading up to that point.
Yeah. I agree. It would have been good if we had a little bit more of their relationship for sure. But I loved how this book ended so much. Like, so Niamh and Solmir, they don't have their like ride off into the sunset happily ever after.
Yeah.
Like, they went and had their own adventures, which I really they needed that. They especially Niamh. She really needed that. And I think Solmir did too, because he needs to discover who he is outside of the Shadowlands, right? And that's hard to do with somebody, I guess, who's also trying to figure out the same thing, maybe. And I think it worked for their characters really well that that's what they decided to do. And then naturally come back to each other. Yeah. I like that. Which is interesting that I liked this, but I didn't like the end of Priory because it was kind of similar, you know? But I felt like that book just ended. This we had a little bit more. I think maybe that's what it was, but whatever. Yeah, I liked the way this was wrapped up. I liked how they went and did their own thing.
I mean, I love a happy ending, but I don't feel like it would have been genuine for where the characters were at that point in time. Neve had like doesn't know who she spent her whole life preparing to be queen, and now she doesn't have to bear that. She's never been able to go out and do things on her own without Red, without worrying about Red, or without the weight of being a queen. And so I love for her that she got to explore things by herself. And she talks about like her interactions with men and learning that, or being able to ferret out the ones that are going to expect more than just a dance from her, and getting to explore on her own. She gets to discover herself. And I love how they were reunited at the tavern with her dancing with this guy, and then the song comes on that sounds familiar, and it's the lullaby that Solmir had hummed for her and sung for her when they were in the Shadowlands, and then they have this dance, and it's just really, it's a year later, and the spark is still there, their attraction is still there, but now they know who they are better.
Yeah,
Plus, they
I just.
probably also had this like some time to process the trauma of being in the Shadowlands and all of these terrible
Oh,
things that have happened.
yeah, definitely. I mean, also with Solmir, I mean, I know it's kind of weird, but he lost like his family, right? Like, I know they didn't exactly have a good relationship. That was his dad, right?
One of them was his dad, one of the kings.
And I mean, at some point, the Shadowlands had been his home. That's just gone. So that's something he has to process too.
I think it's interesting that Red and Niamh and Lyra, they can all, and Fife can feel the call of the magic, but they don't think they'll try to use it. After what they experienced, like if you were in that situation, would you try to use the magic or would you just leave it be?
If I were to use magic, it would be for like simple things like headache remedy or something like that. That sort of thing. I think after having that much magic, I could very easily see why they wouldn't want it, or would want to take a break from it, for sure. I mean, yeah, if I were, I definitely wouldn't want that level of power or to magic to be like my thing, but maybe for simple tasks like cleaning the bathroom or something, use magic for that. What about you?
I don't know. I think that it's interesting. The big concern now that magic is free again is how it's going to be used. So they talk about how bad folks will always find a way to do bad things. And with magic, they may be able to do that more. But maybe good folks will find a way to do good things too.
Yeah.
There's a balance there, right? You have to choose.
Yeah. You have to choose the way you use the magic. And obviously, there are always going to be power hungry people and stuff like that. But hopefully, the good people will rise against it and be able to keep that in check. And I think there are probably maybe this is optimistic of me, there are probably more good people that are willing to, stop bad people, sort of.
Yeah.
Then I feel like there are just more good people than bad people who would use magic.
Oh,
And
yeah.
now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like it wouldn't go well for us in the real world.
Oh, no. Well, and that's the problem with the good versus bad. Like, that is subjective, right? So, what's good for one person is not going to be good for another person. That's like the abortion argument. Like, people who are for and against abortion don't think they're doing things to be bad. People who are against abortion think that they are doing things from a good place.
People who are
People who are for abortion think that they are doing things from a pro like from good things, right? That people don't think that they're acting generally from a place of like badness.
Yeah. There's
But the
actually
problem with
so
like good is that it's subjective. Good for one is not good for all necessarily.
yeah, there's actually a quote in the book about that too. I highlighted it. I don't remember what page it was on, but it was something about about how good is subjective. And she's like, I think one of the gods says to her something about her not being good, and she's like, I don't know what good is, but I know it's like what you aren't.
Yeah.
Something like that. And yeah, they touch a little bit on that about it being subjective. Because yeah, that's true. Yeah.
This would be a disaster in our world. It's a
Oh
good thing we don't
God.
have magic. But
That's true.
headache remedies would be cool.
That would be cool. That would be cool for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, anything else you want to say?
No, I think I'm good. What about
All
you?
right. I think I'm good. Do you have a quote that you liked?
I had so many, but I narrowed it down to one. And you also put yours in, like everything you had highlighted, I had highlighted too. So,
Yeah.
I have life would be so much simpler if all monsters looked the part. And this was me thinking about Solmir at one point because he didn't look like a monster. And I think this is just so true. I mean, they're just monsters can just be regular people, right? You look at, I don't know, extreme example, but like Ted Bundy or something like that, right? Just looked like a totally normal guy.
Yeah. Well, I liked the quote. I think Neve says this, saving some or read one of them, saving someone else was a wall you couldn't scale unless they threw you a rope. I like that a lot. You can want to help someone, but if they don't want to help themselves, it is like scaling a wall without a rope. The want has to be there on both sides.
I highlighted that too. It
That was a good one. That was
was
deep.
a really good one. Yeah. I mean, because you can't, I mean, that's, I mean, we do say things in the real world, like you can't help somebody who doesn't want to help themselves, right?
Yeah.
This is just a much nicer way of putting it, I
It's
think.
poetic.
Yes, in a poetic way. Yep.
Righty. Well, I think that's everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that wraps up For the Throne by Hannah Witten. Join us next time. We'll be discussing Radiant Sin by Katie Robert. This is the fourth book in her Dark Gods of Olympus. I think that's the name of the series. We've talked about the other ones up to this point, so we'll be hitting book four. We hope you join us. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Literary Quest. We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literarycastpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.